to 1, Characteristics of Pure Devotional Service. Last week, we were discussing, if I'm not mistaken, the rareness of pure devotional service on page 14.
Right.
Do you know whereabouts exactly we got up to on this?
We finished the chapter, you know, we finished the first paragraph on chapter 15.
Okay, so we're starting on the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme Lord.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, all right. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharani Nivisesha Sunyavari Pastityade Shatani. Okay, so let's have a look and see what we can do. Yeah, it looks like everyone and Paris following Mayapur, but if anyone wants to, they can happily tune in to what we're doing here in sunny Leicester. Okay. So Ashok Prabhu, Hare Krishna, would you like to start off by reading from this section of The Happiness of Becoming One with the Supreme? We're reading about the characteristics of pure devotional service. And if you remember, there are 6 characteristics of pure devotional service. Can you remember what they are without cheating and looking to page 3 at the bottom?
We'll look at page 3 and say it all.
6 characteristics of pure devotional service.
Pure devotional service brings relief from material distress.
Immediate relief from all material distress. Yeah. Okay. And number 2. You can cheat if you want to.
It's on page 3. Probably.
Okay, you can take it in turns. Number 2?
Yeah. Pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness.
Okay, and a show, Prabhu, number
3. Pure devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. Pure devotional service is rarely achieved.
Number 5?
Those in pure devotional service derive even the conception of liberation. Pure devotional service is the only means to attract Krishna.
Okay, so now we're looking at this one, the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme. This is pure devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. So let's see. Ashok Prabhu, would you like to read for us, please?
The happiness of becoming one with the Supreme. Srila Rupa Goswami says that if Brahmananda, or the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme, is multiplied by 1 trillion fold, it is still cannot compare to an atomic fraction of the happiness derived from the ocean of devotional service. In the Hari Bhakti Sudodaya, Prahlad Maharaj, while satisfying Lord Narasimhadev by his prayer, says, My dear Lord of the universe, I am feeling transcendental pleasure in your presence and have become merged in the ocean of happiness. I now consider the happiness of Brahmananda to be no more than the water in the impression left by a cow's hoof in the earth. Compared to this ocean of bliss, similarly, it is confirmed in the Bhavartha Deepika, Sridhar Swami's commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. My dear Lord, some of the fortunate persons who are swimming in the ocean of your nectar of devotion and who are relishing the nectar of the narration of your pastimes certainly know ecstasies which immediately minimize the value of the happiness derived from religiousness, economic development, sense gratification and liberation. Such a transcendental devotee regards any kind of happiness other than devotional service as no better than straw in the street.
Mm. So this is the example that, these are the examples we're given to understand the nature of pure devotional service. That actually this kind of happiness is very transcendental. And if we understand it right, then we understand that material happiness, because Srila Rupa Goswami has described there are three kinds of happiness. One is the happiness derived from trying to satisfy the body and mind. Two is the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme. And three is the happiness of devotional service. So we've discussed how the happiness, so-called happiness, of deriving pleasure from identifying with one's body and mind is very, very limited and is actually really just a relief from distress. Because the nature of the material condition is actually painful. We were discussing in Bhagavad Gita about pratikaram and apratikaram. There is some difficulty in the material world, which is the pratikaram, and the apratikaram is the counteraction to that difficulty. And generally speaking, we become happy when we counteract the difficulty. This is the nature of material happiness, when we actually counteract the difficulty. But that is not actually happiness. That is not considered happiness. So liberation means to get free from this whole business of trying to counteract the material miseries. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, that a Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma na shochati na kankshati, he no longer hankers, nor he longer laments. So the material happiness means trying to fulfill one's hankering and trying to stop the lamentation. But actually, Krishna's explaining in Bhagavad Gita that spiritual happiness begins when the material hankering and the material lamentation cease. So if we examine carefully what is our material existence, we'll see that it's sort of simply based on this pratikaram and apratikaram, simply trying to counteract the miseries. Hankering is a misery because it remains an unfulfilled longing within the heart and mind that I must have this, I must enjoy like this. And apratikara means when we overcome that, we try to acquire what we want. So basically, what does that mean? It means gratifying the material senses and the mind. Senses, what does it mean when we say the senses? Senses means I've got a particular body which has got a particular set of senses. You have a particular set of senses grouped around the mind. Everyone has a particular individually tailor-made set of senses grouped around the mind. Everyone's got a particularly unique material body. But the principle is the same, that the senses are making demands and we're trying to fulfill those demands. And if we cannot fulfill those demands, then we experience frustration. Actually, this is the nature of material existence. And at best, the cessation which we hope to, that I won't have to work so hard to satisfy my senses when I get old and die. But still the senses are demanding so many things, but the ability to fulfill those senses, the strength to fulfill the demands of the senses, becomes diminished as we get older. But still the sense demands are there. Just like, for example, the sex urge. We see this was exhibited when Alexander the Great was discussing with his minister, and he asked his minister how long this sex urge remains, and the minister told him it's there right till the very end of life. And he didn't believe him. He said, no, this is not possible. So one day the minister said, actually there is one gentleman who is dying, he's on his deathbed. Let us go and see him. He said, oh, and bring your daughter. So Alexander the Great, he had a young, beautiful daughter, and he took the young, beautiful daughter in with him to see this old man who was on his deathbed. And the whole time, the man on his deathbed, he was simply looking at the young, beautiful daughter. So the evidence is there that this pushing of the senses doesn't remain, but the ability to fulfill the desires of the senses becomes diminished. So this is the nature of the material body. Simply unfulfilled desires, the hankering and the lamenting that I could not enjoy. This is the actually material happiness. So this is actually third class happiness. But we are accustomed that this is it. And people try to justify the situation in so many ways, and they say, well, you can't have the good without the bad. But this is only because they have no experience other than this third class so-called happiness. That's actually the nature of material happiness. Now, if we discuss the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme, this sort of happiness actually is the platform on which that sort of hankering and lamenting finishes. One is situated in one's eternal occupational condition. So this is the realization of the Sat feature. That Brahman realization is the realization of the Sat feature, the eternal feature of the Supreme Lord. And one identifies oneself as being on that same eternal platform. But Sat Chit, eternity and knowledge is appreciated when one realizes the nature of the Supersoul. That is, the mystic yogis, they want to develop that yogic meditation on the Supersoul, on the personal form of the Lord. But still there is no Ananda. The Satchit Ananda realization is experienced when one actually engages in the constitutional position of the jiva, which is loving devotional service to Krishna. So this is there are three completely distinct levels of happiness. So this needs to be understood. And this is being discussed from the platform of experience. And here Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī says that Brahmananda, or the happiness of becoming with the one with the Supreme, is multiplied by 1 trillion-fold. Right? It still cannot compare to an atomic fraction of the happiness derived from the ocean of devotional service. So these are statements on the platform of experience, experiential knowledge. Those who've experienced material pleasure, those who've experienced what is Brahman pleasure, and those who've experienced what is actually devotional service. And here we get the authoritative statement in the Hari Bhakti Sudadaya from Prahlad Maharaj, who's a 5-year-old boy, at least he's appearing at that time as a 5-year-old boy, but he's expressing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to Lord Nrisimhadev, that actually, he says, my dear Lord of the universe, I'm feeling transcendental pleasure. This is actually the platform of real pleasure, the nature of the loving dealings of the jiva with the Supreme Lord. He says, I'm feeling transcendental pleasure in your presence and have become merged in the ocean of happiness. Not that he's given up his existence, but he's just feeling like he's completely in transcendental bliss. Okay? What he's saying, I now consider the happiness of Brahmananda, that merging with the impersonal Brahman, to be no more than the water in the impression left by a cow's hoof in the earth compared with the ocean, to this ocean of bliss. So he's speaking from experience, and he's expressing to Lord Nrisimhadev what is this actual, real transcendental pleasure. So if we're looking at pleasure, then we should come to the platform of knowledge of what is actually pleasure. Now the question may come, still I've got this knowledge, but still the taste for these material sense gratification still remains. So what to do? So Krishna describes this in Bhagavad Gita, that he explains that by ceasing the engagement in trying to satisfy the senses by their contact with their sense objects, for example, suppose you want to eat, the object is the sense object is the food, and the sense is the tongue. So we're trying to satisfy the sense with the sense object, yeah? Or the seeing, we're trying to satisfy the sense of seeing by seeing some beautiful thing, the sense object. So this process of stopping this effort to satisfy the senses with their sense objects If that ceases, then still the taste for this remains. But Krishna explains, but by ceasing such engagements and experiencing a higher taste, one becomes fixed in consciousness. So the real principle is how to get that higher taste. So Lord Chaitanya describes in his Shikshastakam, Cheto Darpanam Arjanam, Bhava Mahadevagni Nivapanam, Shreya Kairava Chandrikavataranam, Vidyavadu Jivanam, Anandam Buddhivardhanam, Pratipadam Purnamritasvardhanam, Sarvatmasnaparam Param Vijayate, Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. This is his first instruction of his 8 verses, which contain all the Vaishnava philosophy. And the first principle that Lord Chaitanya is saying, because this is just right in the beginning of Nectar of Devotion, is if we understand the meaning of this verse, it's all glory to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which is the congregational chanting of the holy names, or the glories of the Lord, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years together. Because this dust is covering our real identity. So we're trying to clean the heart. This Sankirtan movement is the prime benediction, the topmost, most essential benediction, the most important benediction for humanity at large, because it spreads the rays of Lord Chaitanya's benediction moon. It spreads the white lotus of good fortune for the jiva because it puts him in his real condition. It is the life of all transcendental knowledge, because if one has got transcendental knowledge, then the thing is, what is the life of that knowledge? Is it simply I sit back in my armchair and I understand what is Brahman and what is spirit and what is Krishna? No, it is the life of all transcendental knowledge. It's how we live transcendental knowledge. Transcendental knowledge means I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. So let me serve Krishna. Let me try to satisfy Krishna's senses. This is the real principle of sense gratification. When we try to satisfy Krishna's senses, then we become satisfied. By trying to satisfy Krishna, then we experience the taste of our senses becoming satisfied. By enjoying our senses through Krishna. By trying to satisfy Krishna's senses, our senses become satisfied. So vidya vadu jivanam. It is the life of all transcendental knowledge. That's how we actually physically do it. We actually engage in that service to Krishna. It increases the ocean of transcendental bliss. Because generally when we think of an ocean, it has its limitations and it stays more or less put. But this ocean of transcendental bliss is not static, it is ecstatic, it is ever increasing. This is the nature of spiritual life. And this is something beyond our experience. So it increases the ocean of transcendental bliss and it enables us to fully taste the nectar for which we are always anxious. Everyone in this world is anxious how to become happy. But actually in this way, it enables us to fully taste that nectar for which we're always anxious, but now we're settling for third best. Yeah? Material happiness. But even we should not be interested. We should learn that the nature of devotional service means that even the second class happiness, as Prahlad Maharaj is saying, of becoming one with the Supreme, is simply second class. Yeah, this is rubbish, actually. He's saying that even if the happiness of Brahmananda is multiplied a trillionfold, it still can't compare with even an atomic fraction of the happiness derived from pure devotional service. Mm-hmm. So these things have to be understood. So if we actually want to taste that transcendental pleasure, then pure devotional service is the means by which this is tasted. Not by mixed devotional service. So our aspiration should not be to go for, let's go for second class or 1.5 class or 2.5 class. No, let's go for first class devotional service. And that way we can actually taste that transcendental bliss for which we're always anxious. This is the hankering of the living entity in every species of life because this is his unnatural condition. Now we're experiencing the unnatural condition of material existence. Krishna's explaining it's very rare. We were discussing the rareness of pure devotional service. Krishna also explains this in Bhagavad Gita. Manushyanam sahasreshu. kaschit yatati siddhai, yatatam api siddhanam kaschit veti mam tattvata. That out of many, many thousands of men, because it's only for the human beings, there are all the other creatures in the other living species of life, you take one drop of water, hundreds and hundreds of living entities in one drop of water. Just try to see how many billions of living entities there are in a glass of water. And here's one who's actually got a human body. So Krishna says, out of many, many thousands among men, one of those may actually endeavor for perfection. So actually taking the effort to start spiritual life is a very rare thing, even among the rare human species. And out of all those who are endeavoring, out of all those who've actually achieved perfection, Krishna says hardly one knows me in truth. So it's a very rare thing, this devotional service. But actually, Lord Chaitanya is making it freely available. Shri Shri Panchatattva Ki Jaya. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namo. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavan Pucha Yogisesha Samadhi Pasti Chandrachi. And to give us something tangible, this statement is given by Sridhar Swami in his commentary on the Bhagavatam, actually Prahlad Maharaj is given this example of the happiness of Brahmananda to be no more than the water of a calf's hoof print. You ever seen a calf's hoof print on the ground? Not even a cow, a calf's hoof print. Something very small, just leaving a hoof print on the ground and the water that fills that, compared to the vast ocean of devotional service. So if we remember these examples that Prahlad Maharaj is giving, it's really, really helpful to give us some real comparison. Well, why should I settle for so much water? And material happiness is described, yes, certainly Govindadas is described that the material happiness, Govindadas Abhilasare, he's explained that this happiness in the material world is certainly there, but it's like a drop of water in a desert. In the desert, where there is actually no happiness, you may get a drop of water. But what happiness is there from that? And also it is chapala sukhalava. It is flickering happiness. One moment it's there, and the next moment it's finished. Just like a drop of water on a lotus leaf. So this is how the Shastras and the Vaishnavas, the sadhus, the Shastra, the sadhu and the guru, are explaining to us what is the nature of material happiness. Flickering and like a drop of water in the desert. But even the Brahmananda is insignificant. So what is the value? Therefore it is stated that the happiness derived from sense gratification, we were reading about this, is that the other types of material happiness, they cannot even dare to enter into the heart of a pure devotee. So this is the nature of this material happiness. And this happiness of becoming one with the Supreme. What is that? Moksha Kama, Kama, Artha Kama.
Dharma Kama Moksha.
Yeah, Artha, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. So first religiosity, that idea of becoming a big religious person and getting performing all the expert rituals, not really on in this day and age, who can do that? And artha, the material economic development that automatically comes as a result of that. And the karma, the sense gratification from all those facilities and resources, and the moksha, the ultimate liberation from these things. All these kinds of happiness are very easily available to the pure devotee, but actually has no interest in any of these things. But he's not bereft of those things. Because the platform of devotional service, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, is actually on the platform of liberation. Because what does it mean, liberated? In the material world, we're bound up and we're forced to serving our senses. But the devotee of the Lord, who's engaged in the devotional service, he's already free to engage in his real activity, which is service to Krishna. But the prison sentence is you haven't got your freedom. The prison sentence of material existence means you're not free to engage in your real occupation. Yeah? You're in prison, You're not free to go about your normal everyday activities. So this material world, this Durga, means I'm not free to serve Krishna. But someone who's engaging on the practice of devotional service is already living on the platform of freedom. And people will say, oh, you're just escaping. Yes, what person in their right mind will want to stay in the prison? Is it not reasonable? But then you see the example of the crabs. That the crabs, when they're being fished by the fishermen, there's a bucket of crabs, and they don't even bother to put the lid on it. Because they know if one crab's trying to get out of the bucket, the others will pull him back in. So, this is the nature of material existence. So, anyway, these are very important. Now, Sridhar Swami here, in his commentary, the Bhagavata Deepika, his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, he said, my dear Lord, some of the fortunate persons who are swimming in the ocean of your nectar of devotion and who are relishing the nectar of the narration of your pastimes certainly know ecstasies which immediately minimize the value of the happiness derived from religiousness, economic development, sense gratification and liberation. Such a transcendental devotee regards any kind of happiness other than devotional service as no better than straw in the street. Yeah. What is the business of going and collecting some straws in the street? What is the use of that? But rather, the business of the Vaishnavas is to swim in that nectarine ocean of devotional service. And as we'll hear Rupa Goswami describe, that the impersonalists are very fond of giving this idea that all the rivers simply merge with the ocean. But they have no knowledge of the living entities who are like sharks and timangila fish and alligators in that ocean of devotional service, all the living entities who are actually swimming in that vast ocean of devotional service, and they have no interest in some puny river. Yes? So this is the situation. The karmis, they have no knowledge about liberation. They cannot understand about liberation. And the impersonalists, they desire simply to merge with the impersonal feature of the Lord. But the Vaishnavas, they're like the living entities who are actually enjoying life, swimming in that wonderful, unlimited ocean of devotional service. So again, the impersonalists cannot even approach that conception because they have no understanding about the eternal personal nature of loving devotional service, the personal exchange of loving dealings between the Lord and his devotees. Like Lord Nrisingadev, who's appearing before Prahlad Maharaj, and these nice loving dealings are going on. Or another personality who appears a lot in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam is Lord Indra. Actually, he very kindly undergoes a lot of unfortunate experiences whereby he makes a lot of mistakes, because I was listening to Radhanath Maharaj explaining this today. He's saying that Indra, he gets selected to show us a lot of things about how we should, what we should not do. Like he gets himself into scrapes. Like this was one of the backgrounds of the Ramayana, actually, that Lord Indra, he has so much opulence and sense gratification that he just desires unlimited pleasures. And there was one very beautiful wife of one great rishi. Who was it? Agastya Muni?
Gautam Muni.
Yeah. And he desired to enjoy with her. Now Indra had the benediction. His mystic power enables him to assume any shape or form he likes. So he assumed the form of this lady's husband and went to enjoy with her. And she consented, you know. Radhanath Maharaj was explaining that this Indra was taking the form of Gautama Muni and saying, well, I know they're about to do these sacrifices and things, but now I so much want to enjoy with you. Let's put those aside and let's just enjoy together. So Indra was thinking like this. And when Gautama Muni came back to his ashram, Indra came out, but he was still in the form of Gautama Muni. So Gautama Muni is thinking, wait a minute, something really fishy going on. How come Indra is looking like me? So he could understand there was something really, you know, mysterious and not quite right going on here. So anyway, he cursed his wife when he found out what the truth. He meditated and he could understand everything that had taken. He cursed both his wife and Indra. He gave Indra the curse that you are so much fond of the vagina that your whole body will be covered by vaginas. Such an embarrassing curse. And Indra, he was mortified. He said, no, please, not that. So actually, Gautama Muni, he agreed to change it, that his body would be covered with eyes instead. So you see pictures of Indra with eyes all over his body. It was a result of this curse. And for Gautama Muni's wife, he cursed her that she would become like a stone. And that, however, she was very deeply apologetic and actually remorseful. So he gave her the benediction that actually when the Supreme Lord Ramachandra comes and sees you and casts his glance upon you, at that time you'll be liberated and gain your original form. So in this way, when that happened, Lord Ram saw her and cast his glance over and she became completely purified by the glance of Lord Ramachandra. And at that time, she became a pure devotee of the Lord. And at that time, she rejoined her husband and their relationship has been very good. So anyway, this situation, the point I'm making is that Indra, he's selected to show us all kinds of mistakes, what not to make. So Indra, his situation is that he gets himself into all kinds of scrapes, not that any mundane, ordinary devotee is selected, but a very, very big, important devotee, like Indra, who, whenever he performs a sacrifice, the Lord personally comes and accepts his offering and eats it there before Lord Indra. Whereas we may make an offering to the Lord, and we may not get that benediction of seeing the Lord personally coming and eating the offering. So this is a very exceptional devotee. But he performs these mistakes, and that's for our benefit. And these incidences are revealed in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, so that we can understand what sort of mistakes not to make. And these are set by a great personality, so we can understand for our benefit. Well, if even a great personality can become passionate and unfortunate in that way, what to speak of little old ourselves? What is our situation? Therefore, we have to be very, very careful and glad that we haven't got such an opulent situation where we could fall into the same heavy Maya. So, but still, Maya is always there, but we have to be very, very careful of her because she's very strong. So, and there we see that these things, they actually are a stumbling block on the path of devotional service. And so our progress in devotional service is required that we learn from the examples of what to do and what not to do from the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam and understand how to advance in pure devotional service. Advance to the level of pure devotional service in order to develop Krishna Prema, which is pure love of Krishna. This we need to be aware is actually our goal in devotional service, and this way we can make nice progress. So, and here we see such a transcendental devotee regards any kind of happiness other than devotional service as no better than straw in the street. He's actually fixed in loving devotional service. One who is engaged in pure devotional service and doesn't fall down under any circumstances, at once is freed from all kinds of hankering and lamentation, and thus comes to the level of Brahman. The Brahman platform, the spiritual platform, is automatically achieved for one who is engaged in devotional service. So this is what Lord Chaitanya is offering. Not third-class happiness, not even second-class happiness. That liberation is a byproduct of devotional service, not the ultimate end in life. Is that okay?
Yep.
Any questions?
Yes, yeah. I have a question. You know, earlier we were talking about impersonalism.
Yes.
Is it, when we talk about impersonalism, is it only Buddhists who practice this kind of thing?
The whole world. The scientists, the religionists, the philosophers, the karmis, everyone's engaged in thinking it's all one, it doesn't matter. The the scientists are very keen on this principle that it's all just one energy and that it all came from a big chunk. There is no God. Some impersonal idea of what is the source of existence. The religionists are very fond of this idea that God is one, and the jnanis, they speculate on the meaning of the Vedas, they study the Upanishads and try to understand the oneness of the living entity with God. But they miss important statements as are found in the Sri Isha Upanishad, where the Sri Isha Upanishad is described, "My dear Lord, please remove your dazzling effulgence so that I can see your real form of bliss." Like that. "Oh my Lord, as brilliant as the sun." So the sun, you cannot look at the sun because the brightness is too great. You can get the idea that the sun's there. But we should know for certain that the sun is not simply the brilliant sunshine that comes into our lives, but it's coming because the source of it is the brilliant sun, the source of all this energy. So this is going on in all spheres. It is being backed up by the modern day so-called philosophers. And in fact, the whole world is full of this impersonalism and voidism. The Buddhist idea is into voidism, that everything is ultimately zero. Everything is void. And the impersonalist is simply a second edition of Buddhism that we call this void, this nirvana state, we call this Brahman. So, you know the one about the impersonalist who goes into the sandwich shop and says, "Make me one with everything." So, they just want to become one. So whether they think it's just the void nirvana or the impersonal Brahman, but the whole world is full of this. So we say, "Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paschachate Shatarani." That I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, O spiritual master. We're addressing Srila Prabhupada, servant of Saraswati Goswami, Saraswati Devi, who is Gauravani Pracharini, who is very kindly preaching the message of Lord Chaitanya Dev. Gauravani. Vani means the instructions or the message. Nirvisesha Sunyavadi, Pastyachade Shatarini. So Nirvisesha Sunyavadi, impersonalism and voidism, who is freeing all the countries which are filled with this impersonalism and voidism. This is the nature of scratch. You know, I hate to say this, but you know, there are many Indian people who follow the Vedas. The Western people don't have much idea about the Vedas. But practically, if you scratch the surface and you find out what they really believe, that God is one or God is zero. Actually, it's atheistic.
A lot of these institutions, the Indian institutions, they preach the same thing as well, you know.
Yeah.
Swadhyaya and everything else here.
They teach the same philosophy.
It's mixed philosophy. They took something from Bhagavad Gita and something from here, but actually impersonalism is the main topic, you know.
But the problem is...
Spread energy, you know, energy is everything, and you spread the energy and you will... You get liberation. Energy is a secondary thing, you know, it's not Krishna himself.
Yeah.
You know?
Krishna says, "Brahmano hi pratishtaham." He says, "I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman." But they're saying, no. They're actually trying to kill off Krishna and say, no, we just go for the impersonal Brahman. But the rascaldom is, they try to use Bhagavad Gita to justify their own so-called philosophy. So Prabhupada's commented on that. If you want to make your own philosophy, then do it on your own, but don't poke your nose in Bhagavad Gita and try and spoil the whole thing. Because this whole Mayavadi commentaries, impersonalist commentaries, has actually killed people's understanding of what is Bhagavad Gita. Because they accept little bits of it, but they don't accept it. But Arjuna explains how to understand it. He says, "My dear Krishna, I totally accept in truth everything that you have told me. So why accept only a little bit of Krishna's Bhagavad Gita? If you're going to take it, take the whole thing. Don't just take the little bits that you like and leave aside the bits that don't quite fit into your worldview of things." This is rascaldom. If they're going to accept Bhagavad Gita, accept it for what it is. Don't try and make it into your own perverted, speculative philosophy. Because this is rascaldom.
Yeah, I had this experience some time ago. This Muslim man who works with me, he was trying to tell me that in Bhagavad Gita, it says that you're not supposed to worship deities. And he got me some verses, you know, from I don't know which version of the Bhagavad Gita. He got me some verses, and along with the English translation. Now look, this is what he says.
Well, then you need to see it in context. Krishna says, don't worship the demigods deities.
Yeah.
Yes. He says, kamaistaiste hritigyanai. That those whose minds are distorted by material desires, they worship the demigods. Mm-hmm. And they're also classed like the impersonalists among the atheists. Because they're against the supreme authority of the personality of Godhead. So these demigod worshippers are also counted as atheists. They're against the supreme authority of the personality of Godhead. So demigod worship is so popular. Impersonal philosophy is so popular. This means atheistic mentality. Why don't you accept the authority of Krishna? Krishna says, those who worship the demigods, they indirectly worship me, but they do so in a wrong way.
Avidya.
It's ignorance, yeah. So Krishna is very clear about it in Bhagavad Gita. He doesn't mince his words. He says that their so-called knowledge is stolen by illusion. That actually their minds are distorted. So if something is distorted, then you can't see the real picture. But Krishna is also saying when your mind has passed through the dense forest of illusion, of studying all the flowery words of the Vedas, which give one a wonderful idea. Yes, you can enjoy your happiness this way. All these nice flowers and fruits without seeing this is actually the tree they're growing on. You know, all these different types of material happiness is simply interested in the flowery words of the Vedas without understanding what is this tree. They're simply going for the externals without understanding what is the nature of reality. So Krishna is pointing out that Ahamadiya Hidevanam, in every respect, I am the source of all the demigods and the great sages. So these things, and Krishna's explaining at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Ma may come, Sharanam Vraja, you surrender to me alone. But they say, no, we've got some other interest. We're not interested in what Krishna has to say. They take a little bit of what Krishna has to say, but ignore his message. It's just like if I say, you know, there's an invitation to a party at my place in Goloka Vrindavan. And they say, oh, party, yeah, let's have a big party. Forget about the fact that this is an invitation to go to Goloka Vrindavan to enjoy an eternal blissful party with Krishna. They just say, yeah, let's have a party. Krishna says party. And they focus on that one word without taking the whole thing into consideration. So this is the problem. Because the world is full of Mayavadi rascals and they dare comment on Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And what they do is they comment on Bhagavad Gita Katha, Srimad Bhagavatam Katha, and simply mislead everyone in the whole world. Because they're not actually Vaishnavas, they're Mayavadis. They're rascals. Krishna says, Avajananti mam mudha. Krishna describes them. Not that we describe them, Krishna describes them. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. Mama Bhuta Maheshwaram. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. So Krishna calls them mudhas. So what to do? So we accept. Krishna says you're a mudha. So you're a mudha. They may not like it. It may not be popular, but it's the fact. So our business is to somehow attract these mudhas into trying to understand Krishna from the perspective where Krishna gives it to Arjuna. He says, because you're never envious of me, I'll explain this to you. Because you are my devotee as well as my very dear friend. But someone who's envious of Krishna, who wants to enjoy the position of being Krishna, who wants to be God, then they can't understand Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying this Bhagavad Gita is for people who are not envious of me. And if you're envious of me, you can't understand it. Only if you're my devotee can you understand it. Bhaktya mama vijanati. I can be understood as I am Arjuna only by undivided devotional service. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So this we have to be very clear about. So nice question. Any other points or questions here? Is it alright?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even the Swadhyaya Parivar, you know, I'm talking about Swadhyaya Parivar. They allow all the devotees taking part in it. They are not, all of them are non-vegetarian as well. You know, a lot of them, you know.
Non-vegetarian.
They eat and drink everything else, you know, and everything is welcome. So we are in Swadhyaya Parivar, you know, we are following him, everything else, you know. And
so now we've accepted this rubber stamp, so we can do whatever we like.
It's based on Bhagavad Gita, you know, everything based on Bhagavad Gita, you know.
Yeah. Well, Krishna.
No, this thing is going on in India as well, you know, but now we started in England as well, you know. There are a lot of followers of Swadhyaya.
Yeah,
they go
in the village to village now. They went to my village, no? Our community are following them.
Swadhaya Parivar.
Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah? A lot of them down here, they follow them.
Yeah.
But when people have no knowledge, they speak all kinds of rubbish.
Rubbish, that's it, yeah. They say you can do what you like, you know, yes, I'm doing this, this, it's okay, no problem.
But Krishna doesn't say you can do whatever you like.
No.
You do according to the principles of Kula Dharma, you do it for me. And says, yet karoshi yadashnasi, all that you do, all that you eat, do it as an offering to me. You offer fruit, flower, leaf, water. Not meat, not fish, not eggs. Krishna doesn't say I accept these things. These things are forbidden in the revealed scriptures. So people who are going with this understanding, Prabhupada explains, those people who teach this, they're animals. Not even human beings. And the people who follow them are also animals.
The big animals.
Yeah. The big animals are the ones who are teaching it, and other people, they're training up other people to become animals. And the worst thing, it's a great offense to Krishna, because they're completely misrepresenting his words. Just like if you make some statement, and some public statements, and the newspaper misrepresents you, it's a great offense.
Yeah.
Yeah? And you can sue them. So Krishna, his suing, there's no defense. Yeah. Yeah, he's got all the capacity to enforce, make all enforcement against him. Yeah. So this is a great offense to present Krishna in a demoniac way. Those who are against the authority of Krishna, they're asura, they're demons, actually. Very simple. This is the sura and asura. Those who are faithful to accept the words of Krishna, but those who are trying to twist what Krishna says to satisfy their own purposes, they're the biggest rascals. In the Sriya Upanishad, it said even the worshippers of demigods and those who worship the who try to worship the impersonal Brahman, actually they're the biggest rascals, and they go to the darkest regions of ignorance. This is the statement of the Upanishad. Powerful, powerful statements. But this is there in the Ishopanishad. So if they claim to be followers of the Upanishads, why don't they see what is there in the Ishopanishad? Instead they know, they just want to accept that God is impersonal. Hmm. Interesting, huh? So, how to understand devotional service means that one has to understand from Krishna's devotee. Therefore, we're reading Nectar of Devotion. We're trying to understand this from Krishna's devotee. Srila Prabhupada is going to all this trouble to give us this literature. And it's very fortunate if we take advantage of this and try to understand what is the nature of Krishna consciousness from a devotee. Otherwise, there's no possibility. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that I explained this to Vaivashvata Manu. His son was Ikshaku, and he explained it to Manu, and the saintly kings, they understood it in that way by disciplic succession. But these people, they've concocted their own thing, completely different from what Krishna said. So if we're going to understand it, we have to understand it in the bona fide disciplic succession, not making up our own program. That's not the process. So therefore Krishna says, evam parampara praptam, imam raja shayovidu. This has to be understood by disciplic succession and not otherwise. And people who are fortunate can catch the understanding of what is devotional service. And people who are unfortunate, who are simply either cheaters or being cheated, then it is very unfortunate. These people, they're worshipping some rascal as being God because he does some cheap mystical tricks. Although we've discussed here, right in the beginning of Nectar of Devotion, about the different types of mystic cities which the yogis have. And in the Mahabharata and the Srimad Bhagavatam, you find all kinds of incidents of people displaying mystic power. Not some cheap two-bit trick, you know, of making some dust, you know, having frizzy hair. You know, this is all described, you know, in the Shastra. And now, because people are so ignorant and because they want to be cheated, so these people who are worshipping some so-called god, they're animals. And the people who are proposing or allowing themselves to be proposed as god are animals, and the people who worship them are also animals. That's the fact. So how to convert the animals into human beings? That is our business. Therefore we try to distribute these books far and wide and get people to appreciate. If they just start to take these books, start to lean a little bit towards Krishna instead of turning their backs on Krishna, then they'll be benefited.
What's happening, you know, because... Because these people, they are preaching this false philosophy in the name of Bhagavad Gita, you know, people accepted it, you know.
Yeah.
And they allow all this nonsense to take place as well, you know. Then we start preaching this pure thing, you know. People don't want to know it. So, no, we are all right with Swadhyaya, you know.
Yeah.
It's not very good, you know.
He lets you do what you want to do.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Well, this is why Buddhism...
It's also based on Bhagavad Gita as well, you know. That's it, you know.
It's based on third-class happiness.
That's right, yeah.
On the simply trying to find some justification for enjoying my senses and do what I want to do.
Yeah.
It's not based on bona fide Shastra.
No, it's
or bona fide understanding of Shastra.
But there are so many of them here, you know. You said they got the program here, you know, in
Leicester College.
Something like that, yeah. There are hundreds of, in Sunday, you know, after finishing your service, hundreds of them come out from the program, you know. You wonder how many. Nearly 100, could be 500-600 probably, you know.
Yeah.
How can they go 500-600? We hardly get 100 here on Sunday, you know.
Yeah.
They are putting 500-600.
Well, therefore we have to preach very strongly. We have to learn what is the understanding of Krishna consciousness. If we understand nicely, then we can present it nicely. Therefore it's very important that we carefully understand what is Krishna consciousness. And the way we develop our understanding is whatever we've learned, we try to express that to others. We don't have to wait to become a pundit. Just now, whatever you understand, this is Lord Chaitanya's order. This is Vidyavadu Jivanam. This is the life of all transcendental knowledge. That yare deka tare kaha Krishna upadesh. Wherever you go, whomever you meet, speak to them about Krishna. Tell them the actual philosophy of Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya says, Amara Egyaya Guru Hai Tara E Desh. On my order, this is Lord Chaitanya's order, on my order, you become guru and try to liberate everyone in this land. How? Yare Deka Tare Kaha Krishna Upadesh. Simply, whoever you meet, whoever you see, speak to them about Krishna and tell them the actual philosophy of Krishna. This will benefit you, just as Srila Prabhupada, he came to the West. Why? His Guru Maharaj told him very strongly at both his first and last communication with him, it will be good for you and it will be good for those who hear you if you explain about Krishna. So tell them, please. Don't let everyone rot and suffer. It is for compassion for the suffering humanity that Prabhupada came to the West and traveled 15 times around the world starting at the age of 70. Otherwise, why will anyone undergo so much trouble? You know, now it's time to retire. But no, that's when Prabhupada started vigorously preaching. So we shouldn't wait, because Prabhupada, he told us, you're all young men. Even Jayananda, how old are you now, Prabhu?
68.
So you're in the peak of health. And Ashok Prabhu, you're a very young man. How old are you now?
24,
great. And Prabhupada encouraged us. He said, you're all young men, so take this responsibility seriously and you can get nice results. Is that alright? Hare Krishna. Thank you very, very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So next week we'll discuss about attracting Krishna. Hare Hare Bol. Next to devotion ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutadaya Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinara. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachari Nidhisesha Sanyavadi Pasti Jadeshita. Hari Hari.